ladies and gentlemen, dreamers and deep sleepers, and those of you who don't sleep so deep as well. I am Anna, and with me is my dreamy podcast host, Jared.
Hello.
We will be your hosts for this episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well this game would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Neo Dreams, designed by Ivan Lashin, artwork created by Evgeny Zubkov and Nick Gertz, and published by Hobby World. So, Neo Dreams is a light but thinky 2-4-player money collecting, tableau building, worker placement game where workers act as CEOs who are in the business of crafting and selling dreams in the near future using the technology known as Onirushunt.
More quickly, it's Onirushunt.
Excellent. Onirushunt. Will this game build the dream empire it aspires to be? Or will it come crashing down just like you do as you roll out of bed while dreaming of falling to your doom? Ouch. Join us at the two top table as we discuss.
Wow. Just came right in there and took over.
Yes, because I wanted to call you dreamy.
I know, but I could have done the game blurb. Ian and I share, but it's fine.
So, Jared, if you were paying for a dream...
Oh, you're doing the question, too. What is this? We're in a dream world.
Yep. In this dream world, I am the host of this podcast. And you
are
my...
I have so many questions.
You are my lowly assistant.
That makes sense.
All right. So, Jared.
Yeah.
If you were paying for a dream, what kind of dream would you seek out? And remember, this is a family-friendly podcast.
That is true. I think it would have to be something that I know is just so far outside of my reach in real life. An easy example, I would dream of being an incredible singer in front of thousands, and I'm just nailing this banger of a song. That would never, ever happen in real life as a tone-deaf, non-musically inclined person. So something like that, whether it's music or... creating this incredible painting, writing the next great poetry, like something like that, like being able to experience that creativity.
You write pretty good poetry.
It's very like high school level, okay poetry.
It's like you listen to a lot of 90s rap poetry is what it's like.
It's also that. I don't know why. I don't know that
Did
I think 90s rap is that great.
To a lot of 90s rap.
But I also don't think my poetry is that great. So it does line up really well. It's really cute. I will admit that, but I don't think it's that great.
So anyway, your dreams.
Yeah. So I would want to, there's a lot of parts of the creativity in our world that I don't think I'm very good at that I would want to explore at the peak of its power. And so being able to explore some of those things, I think is something that I would be very interested in.
That's cool. Yeah.
What about for you?
Well, you made me just think about a whole new world. I wasn't even thinking about experiencing a different life necessarily, I guess, is kind of where you went with that.
Sure.
I had two things that came to mind with this question. The first is I would like a flying dream that isn't, number one, difficult, or number two, terrifying. Because I've had flying dreams, so I very much like dreams, actually.
You dream a lot.
I dream a lot.
I don't.
I learn things about myself through my dreams.
Yeah.
I did a middle school science fair project on dreams and did tons of research on them. Like, I really like dreams. And so when you dream about flying, it's supposed to mean that you're feeling very successful, right?
Sure.
And so I've had dreams about flying, but they've always been very difficult. Like, I'll have to flap my arms as hard as I can, and I'm like barely hovering above the ground. Either that, or I'll have dreams where like I'll jump and I'll jump way too high, like above the buildings and kind of thing. And then, but I can't enjoy it because I'm too scared about when I come down, am I going to die? Like, because I jump so high that I'm above this building and then I start to like slow fall and I'm like, oh crap, I'm going to like get murdered because I accidentally jumped higher than this tree, you know, or whatever.
It's like a cartoon.
It is. It really is. So those are the extent of my flying dreams, which I don't know what that says about my feelings of success.
Wow.
Really. They're hard and dangerous or something like that. So that was the first thing that came to mind, is I would like a flying dream that is only enjoyable and doesn't have like the fear, the difficulty that my current flying dreams are like. And then the other thing that came to mind is occasionally I will have what's called lucid dreams.
Yeah, that's in this game, in fact.
Yeah. And well, what lucid dreams are in real life is is when you become aware of the fact that you're dreaming while you're still in a dream. And because you're aware that you're dreaming, you have the ability to partially control the dream. And so I have occasionally had lucid dreams. The first time I remember, I was like really, really little, 6 years old or something. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, this is a dream. I can just go in this candy shop and eat all the candy. And I did. So.
Were you satisfied?
Well, looking back at my six-year-old self, I'm like, dude, dream bigger, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's more to life than eating all the candy in the candy
shop.
Come
on, six-year-old Anna.
I know, right?
Figure it out.
But as an adult, I've used lucid dreaming sometimes to go and try out things that I would be nervous to try out in real life, like having hard conversations with somebody or going back and meeting somebody that I hadn't seen in a while that was maybe from my childhood that I really wished that I could catch up with. And so I very much enjoy those kinds of dreams where I have a little bit of control of saying, I want to go try this out, or I want to go talk to this person, and then I can do it. So those are the two things that would come to mind. I guess I'll have to save extra money and buy two dreams. But you want to live a whole new life.
Yeah.
And be
so I got to keep going.
What kind
back.
Of singer would you be?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know. I didn't think that far. I got to dream bigger. It's hard for me to like even articulate what that would look like. I was telling someone the other day, I'm even really bad at like finding and picking out songs. I'm just not good at it. I don't understand how to do it. And I would say 98.5% of what I listen to is influenced by people around me. Like I just don't go find songs because I don't know how to do it. So to even like articulate what I would do in this pretend world, I can't even imagine. I would just say, load it up, man. You surprise me and we'll see how it goes.
All right, Jared's dream, everybody.
Wowzers. Dream bigger, Jared.
That's right. Well, hey, assistant, you can do the how to play now if you'd like to.
Okay, let's talk about how to play. And let me go ahead and tell you, you need to buckle up, because for a simple game, there's a lot going on here. All right, Neo Dreams is played over a series of turns where players can collect resources, play cards, use abilities on said cards, upgrade said cards, and advance the sleep cycle. Play continues with players taking turns until someone has created or played their 12th dream card. Whoever has the most credits at the end of the game wins. Each player is given a mainframe, which identifies the player's color, acts as a player's cheat sheet, and also keeps up with the player's resources. Additionally, players are given 3 Onironaut figures in their color, 3 object tokens, 3 cards, and a dream board. The one who last slept gets to go first, and the person to their right gets the last player token. On your turn, you start with 2 main choices. Either deploy an Onironaut to the Onirosphere, or the main board, or you can advance the sleep cycle. Let's start with deploying Onironauts. When deploying an Onironaut, you place it on one of the empty spaces on the main board. The main board, or the Onirosphere, is a 4-column by 3-row grid. Each space has a different set of actions you can take. The first type of action is to gain resources. There's 3 types of resources: knowledge, memory, or fantasy. Knowledge and memory are your 2 main resources, and then fantasy acts as a wild to be either used in conjunction with knowledge or memory. The next type of action is to draw a card. There are 3 types of cards: lucid, neo dreams, and recursive. Each card has its own credit value, what you want at the end of the game to have the most of, a cost to create said card, a resource value if you decide to discard the card, and a card ability and an upgraded version of that ability. The difference between these cards is primarily in their abilities. Lucid cards have powerful one-time effects that require recruiting clients to activate them. Neo Dreams require broadcasts that are activated when a broadcast action is taken. Recursive dreams are dependent on other actions you take in the game. Appeasing those requirements can provide you with extra rewards. When you're drawing cards, that can be taken from either the open market, there's always two cards face up from each deck, or if you don't like either of those, you can draw randomly from the appropriate deck. The next action is to create a card, or play a card if you're no fun and don't want to get into the theme. You need to pay the cost of the card from your resources in order to create the new dream into your tableau. Next is the gaining object action and the placing object action. These are two separate actions to be clear, but I'm going to explain them in conjunction. Think of objects like product placement in a movie. When you gain objects, you gain the number of objects shown on the action and add them to your supply. When placing objects, you can place objects on cards already played in your tableau. You can play up to as many as you have in your supply, and of course, for the number of spots that are on any of the cards that you have in your tableau. Once you fill all the spots on a card that allow for objects, then you have officially upgraded the ability on that card and can now use a stronger ability in future turns. Objects that have been placed are worth 1 credit each at the end of the game. The next action is to link clients with your lucid cards that are already in play. Linking a client to one of your lucid dreams allows for that big payout. You use the ability on the card, and that client stays there until a different card in your tableau discards them, allowing you to go for that big payout again. As I alluded to before, broadcasting is a different action that you can take. That is what you need to trigger all the cards that are Neo Dreams that have the broadcast symbol. Each card in this category can be activated once when the action is taken. All right, so those are your actions that you can take if you were to deploy. Now let's talk about advancing the sleep cycle. There's a cycle marker that keeps track of the stage of sleep you're in. If you decide to move the sleep cycle marker instead of deploying, then you'll get to do a couple of things, and each of these things can be done in order of the player's choice. And let's be clear, the sleep cycle track is on the main board, not each individual board. So when it is moved, simultaneously, all players remove their Onironaut figures one at a time back to their pool if those Onironauts line up in the same column that the sleep cycle token had just entered. Then they take what is called a returnal action. Essentially, all that means is they get to decide whether they're going to create a card or draw a card tied to the row that Onironaut was pulled from. Then there is an ability tied to each column of the sleep cycle track. The one who moved the sleep cycle track token gets to activate the ability of the column that the token moved into. All right, we're almost there. One other thing you can always do on your turn is discard cards. Discarding cards allow you to gain resources immediately as designated on the cards. Once you've done your action, you refill the market if that is needed and check to make sure the endgame hasn't been triggered. If it hasn't, play passes to the left. If the endgame has been triggered, players continue playing until the one with the last player token ends their turn. Credits are calculated based on card value. Again, objects are worth 1 credit apiece. And then your remaining resources, cards in hand, and unused objects add a little bit extra to your credits as well. And combining these determines your final score. Let's head back over to the table and discuss.
Woo!
Well, and can I give a disclaimer, I guess?
Oh, sure.
Based on that, because Jared just talked for a long time about those instructions, y'all.
And I said Onironaut like 800 times.
You did. And I'm sure some of you are shaking your head being like, that is so much stuff and it is so complicated. And I also was doing that when Jared explained this game to me. So I will say, typically when we play games together, we will both learn the game. But yep. In this case, I didn't have as much time. And so Jared learned the game and then he was explaining it to me. And I got this deer in the headlights look. He was like, are you okay? Like, do you actually want to play this game? And I was like, yeah, I do. But you just said a lot of really weird words and I don't even know what it is going on. But really, it's not as hard as it seems.
It makes, like, once it's you get so past not, it, it not makes so much hard. Sense, and it's super simple, actually.
Yeah, it's actually really simple. So don't be scared off by everything Jared just said. Or, I mean, you could be scared off by other parts of the game if you think it wouldn't work for you. But don't let the long
how to play
make you think that this game is insurmountable, because it is a fairly simple game, all things considered. It's just got a lot of themes, and you got to know what everything's called, really, is the biggest hurdle to overcome. So there you go. That's my disclaimer.
I feel like when I described how to play this game to you, you looked at me like I had just explained.
It was like you were talking in Latin to me or something. I remember, like,
oh yeah, that's a much better example.
You were talking, yeah. You were like pointing out something on a card, and I was like, can you just say the sentence again? And I think I had to say it like three times. I was like, okay, but what does this word mean? What does this word mean? What does this word mean?
Well, that's why you've got to use the terminology, because there's lots of cards that use the terminology.
Right, yes.
And so you can't just be like, this actually just means play a card. Because if you just say play a card, you're going to miss it, because there's a create a card thing. And if you don't realize that, it's going to become a problem. So...
yes, yes.
Very important.
Or even like thinking about the recursive cards. Like recursive is a word that's in the description on a card that's linked to different bonuses and actions and stuff if you play that card. So yes, you do need to learn the terminology, but that is actually the hardest part of the directions. The directions are not quite as complicated as it might
seem.
That's
right. If you ripped the theme off of this game, I could describe that game in a minute and a half, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what it is. Like, it's super simple, but...
but the theme is fun. So we like the theme.
That's right. I agree.
We're not ragging on the theme.
In fact, I would not have bought this game blind if I didn't like the idea of the theme. Yeah. I think the theme is so cool. With all that said, with our big old disclaimer, Anna, what draws you into this game?
Well, I mean, the draw for me was dreams.
Okay.
So... I thought a game about creating dreams in a dream world would be very, very fun to play in. And I mean, I like worker placement economy style games as well.
Yep.
And where you're building your own kind of empire, and then you're seeing if yours is better than the other person's, I guess, slightly less PvP maybe style games. I enjoy that. So I think all of that was a draw, but really the main initial thing that caught my eye was, I mean, the artwork stands out. It's neon. It's like fantastical looking.
It is that.
And the fact that it was about dreams, which I mentioned before, I've always been really interested in. So How about you?
Yeah. So like we just said, the theme is what really drew me in to begin with. But once I kind of popped the box open and started getting into the rule set, I think the thing that once I understood what the game was really about, I really like the combination of building the engine, but the engine doesn't matter if you don't get the engine to do the right thing. Like, you could have a really efficient resource building engine, but if it's not making you any money, then who cares? Because your resources aren't your money. And so I like that combination of having to build something, but making sure you're building it in a way that is very efficient. And because the game is so fast, you've got to be very purposeful in the way that you go about building that efficiently.
Yes, I would agree with that. You're talking about building the engine. I think it's important to note that this game plays quickly. So it's not going to be like your big empire building games where you're hardly doing anything the first few rounds, but that's because you're amassing resources to do this and this and this. I mean, this game kind of takes off pretty quickly.
Oh, it clips.
You have enough resources to build a card. What's the term?
Create a card.
Sorry.
Unbelievable. We just did a whole spiel about this.
Okay. Well, you can cut it out.
Nope.
Even going into the very first turn, you could create your first card if you wanted to. Go ahead and start getting bonuses. There were a couple of games where the very first turn, I maxed out my upgrades on my cards and started getting resources. Yep. I think the very first turn of one of the games, you went ahead and attracted a client and started giving those bonuses. And so there's not, you're not having to have these kind of slow turns as you're building to finally I can do things. You really get to start doing things right away. And as a result, the game goes very quickly. And yeah, so you're not making so much of a long-term strategy. And I think I'm...
I mean, you are, though. Like, it isn't, because, okay, so I'm thinking about it like this. You start with that dream card where you have two dreams to begin with already in play. And you start with three cards. So unless your opening draw is just awful, you've got two cards already in play, quote unquote, and you've got an idea of what you want your game to look like based on what's already in your hand. So between those, you can go ahead and say, okay, this is what I want to do, at least for the first half of the game, to build into this. Now, what happens from there? I don't know. I agree with you there. There's no way to plan the back half of this game very well because you don't know what's going to flip up.
Right. Well, and sometimes you're close enough to the end. I mean, once you get to the first half, you've already got 9 cards, 3 more cards, and you're going to end the game,
sure. You
know, and you don't have to worry as much about strategy. Just play your last 3 cards and get done because you did good, you know?
Yeah.
And get out.
I do think a lot of the strategy is in the first half.
Yeah.
And then it turns very tactical at the end to be efficient as possible.
Mm-hmm. To make sure and get as much as you can, but
as
also
quickly
end
the
game
before
somebody else is going to get more.
That's right.
And I'll say, too, that I don't think you could pick your strategy before you go into the game. I think you're right that you've really got to look at your starting hand. Because if you like a strategy, so for example, some of the strategies, I mean, you can do a strategy that's really built around attracting those big name clients and then making them go away and then attracting them again. Because Jared said in the how to play, there's really big bonuses that come from them.
From the lucid cards.
But it takes longer because you've got to upgrade the cards and you've got to get the clients and you've got to send them away and then you got to get them back in order to activate those cards. One game I just kind of built around, I had a lot of cards that gave me extra resources. So I built this kind of machine where I never really had to go on the board in any of the spaces that gave me resources because, well, and advancing the dream cycle can help with that too, because you can advance it to a point where it activates all your cards or not all your cards, but all of your Neo Dream cards and where it gives you resources. And so the point at which you activate the dream cycle also plays into your strategy, determining are you going for upgrades and resources or are you going for activating those Neo Dream cards? So that was me saying
you can't
really have just a favorite way of playing because you've got to look at the cards that you have and you've got to build off of them. That's
you kind of got
saying.
Me. You had me debating in my head because when you said that you're kind of limited to your opening hand in a way,
and the opening board. I'd say.
I mean, I think you, especially as a newer player, want to use that opening hand and your board to kind of help dictate your strategy, but. I wonder if there is a world where I just feel like the game goes so fast that it would really require efficiency to not use that opening hand.
Mm-hmm.
The more I think about it, I mean, we always did. Like, there might be cards where I'm like, well, I don't love this one, but I can make these two work really well, and I would rather do that than waste time trying to get new cards and just getting rid of those. So. I would agree. So we always talk about why we have a game in a two top spot. I think for me, there's a couple of things on this particular game. One, I don't think anything changes at 3 and 4 players for this game. I think it just
takes longer.
It just takes longer. You cycle through the deck, I guess.
There could be some strategy there because maybe you could know certain cards are coming or I don't know.
Yeah, and like that. There is more of the board. Like the board changes in a 3 or 4 player game. You flip the board over. I don't know. I like this at 2. I like the back and forth nature of it. I like there's outside of placing your dudes on the board, there's not a lot that impacts what you're doing on your turn And so I would rather play this at two, and I don't feel like I've lost anything. There's some games that I play at two player and I'm like, eh, it's really missing a key component of the game.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that way at all in this game. I also feel like it's really difficult, unless you have a lazy Susan, like I feel like it's very difficult to see the board with more than two players.
There's quite a lot of small text to read on every card to yeah. understand if you want to use the card or not. Yes.
And there's just not a good way to present it where everyone can see easily. And that's fine.
I mean, with two people, it is if you sit on the same side of a table yeah, and the text is
saying.
Facing you, you can
count.
See it. But yeah, in a higher count, it'd be difficult.
So those are kind of some of my reasons for it. I always love a full game that's not designed just for two players that, I don't feel like I'm losing anything. And so that's a compliment to the game of saying, I really appreciate that aspect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Do you want to talk about the artwork? Because I mentioned a little bit
100%
about the artwork. And I'll mention one thing and then I'll kind of turn it over to you. So the artwork was one of the initial draws. Because the game box is beautiful. It stands out. It's got this kind of dark background with this neon, Neo Dreams, right? Makes sense. Aha. This neon type of art. But they went above and beyond, I feel like, with the artwork.
Oh, absolutely.
There were things that were artistically rendered that didn't even have to be artistically rendered. For example, when you were attracting clients, they come in these standard pieces where they just have the silhouette of the torso of somebody. But if you flip them over, they've each got a real illustrated person
right.
face on them. And same thing with the objects. You know, they can come really standard where you can flip them over and they've each got an illustrated object. And it doesn't contribute anything extra to the game. So it doesn't matter like if you get a person or what object you get
sure.
or anything like that. But I think it's really cool that you would go above and beyond to artistically make the objects and the people look different, even if you didn't have to. That's really props to that game for that. So.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think, so there's like a real thought process for this game as far as theme goes. It's not just, oh, it's cool that we're going to buy dreams and sell them and whatever. But this is, there's text all through the rule book. That doesn't get in the way, but it's there to kind of describe the theme behind all of this. And the other thing that I will say, in addition to what you put, I was blown away by the art on the cards. I truly did not expect that. I expected it to be good, but I feel like it was so good that there were times where I was looking at the cards and getting lost in, oh, I wonder what that dream's about. And I was more interested in that than I was playing the card at the moment. Because I was like, I just want to know what the story is here.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, Jared would exclaim occasionally. He would draw a new card and be like, oh my goodness, that's gorgeous.
Yeah.
In the middle of the game. Because
I
his artwork
really
has some of these cards.
It. I don't know. No, it was really cool. And I think it really sold it. You know, you're asking me to learn these terms and you're asking me to buy into the fact that I'm a CEO that's selling dreams. That's fine. I need to feel like I'm in this because it at the end of the day, it is still a lighter game and I'm building a tableau and moving my workers around. So give me something to where I feel like I'm there. And the artwork does that.
And that's a good distinction because we often will say that we like the artwork in a game.
Sure.
And I think games more and more have been focusing more on good artwork. And so you're getting a lot of games with good artwork. But I agree, there's something very unique about this game's artwork.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to jump in here from the editing room and make a comment. So looking at Hobby World's website, it confirmed a suspicion that I had that this art was AI generated. I know that's a very complicated and divisive topic. And I don't want to come across like we're taking one side or the other. I don't think AI is a black and white issue. I think that there's uses for it. And there's also times where it's either lifeless or it's stealing somebody else's work or, you know, however you want to get into that. I do think that a lot of intentionality was given when thinking about how to implement the art on these cards. It does have a vibe that is futuristic and should, given the kind of theme that it is. But again, I understand that different people are going to have different opinions on that, and that's totally fine. But I did want to go ahead and note that here, that the art that we are kind of gushing over a little bit is AI generated. I don't know enough to know, because there's two artists that are listed, and so I don't know how much of it is just prompt and they're getting credit for that, how much of it is editing, how much of it is curating, you know, whatever it may be. I'm just not smart enough to know the ways to decipher that. So I'm just giving the disclaimer and you can do with it what you will. All right, back to the episode. All right, so that's artwork. I think it's great. The other components are fine. I don't really have any issue there. What about your favorite mechanic?
My favorite mechanic in this game, it would have to be advancing the dream cycle. The ability to, at any point in time, decide I'm not going to place. Instead, I'm going to advance the dream cycle.
Sure.
Because what advancing the dream cycle does is it activates the workers that you've placed in that column for everybody. But for the person that advances the dream cycle, you also get certain bonuses for advancing the dream cycle. And there's a lot of strategy in there, because you can advance in a way that gets you more resources, or you can advance in a way that activates all of your Neo Dream cards. And so if I am really banking on some resources that I want to activate from my Neo Dream cards, and Jared perchance wants that or knows that, he could advance the dream cycle without even playing any of his guys. I mean, he could just do it. And then I lose out on that chance to get that bonus. So I don't know. I feel like that, and it's silly, right? Because I say I like not as much PvP, but I think this is one of the ways where you can really notice and kind of mess up your opponent's strategy a little bit, and a way that it can really play into your strategy. And so I'm remembering one game that we played where I had poured a lot into the Neo Dream cards. That was the majority of my cards. And I had it where every single time I had the chance to advance to a spot where I could get that bonus, I was doing it. I was getting way more resources than I would have gotten just by placing every single time I was able to do that. But then Jared figured it out. And so then he started advancing, even when he might not have been ready to, just so I couldn't get that. But I think that adds a really cool component that's unique to, I mean, it makes it not just a get your resources by your cards
sure
type of game when it adds that. So how about you?
It is an interesting balance, because you can spend a lot of time on the sleep track, but there's benefits that your opponent's getting as well, mm-hmm. if they're in that column and being able to pull their workers back and play cards.
Yeah. And it's not like you're totally messed up if the opponent does that either. I mean, you could realize, oh, he's doing that. He's focusing on the dream track. I'll focus on this other thing.
And there's other ways to trigger those Neo Dream cards.
Yes, it's true. You can place and trigger them as well.
But I agree with you that there is a nifty navigation of that. For me, I think I've already kind of mentioned it. I just like the combination of having my tableau, but the engine itself is not the end game. And I've had games where I got about a third of the way through and I'm like, this engine's awesome, but I have to pivot right now because I'm not making enough money to be able to get what I need to for the end of the game. And so it's that delicate balance of navigating, where am I putting my guys? When am I using that sleep track? When am I shifting from focusing resource heavy to getting into the end game? All that timing in a very short time. Like, I think a two-player game, 30 to 40 minutes. And yeah. I love that.
I think you could even maybe go shorter if everybody...
Yeah, if you're not like really overthinking each turn, then absolutely.
Yeah, if you play a lot and you're like, let's just get a quick game in and not think too hard about the strategy.
Sure. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. What is the game lacking?
Well, I was thinking about this because we always try to ask this question. And so I'll say that the first game that we played, I was not as into the theme. And I wanted to be into the theme because we got this game because I like dreams and dreams are cool, right? But it was just the decipher. It was the deciphering of the cards. And I would be reading cards and having to go look up, what does this word mean? What does this word mean? And that took me out of it a little bit.
Yeah, I think the first game you asked me the same question like three times because you had to keep coming back to it.
Yeah, because the cards all kind of linked together.
And it's a lot of language, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot of language. So, I mean, after the first game, or even halfway through the first game, I kind of settled in. I was like, oh, this is fun. And then I'd say by the second game that we played, I was able to focus a little bit more on the theme. And so... Yeah, I mean, if you buy this game, you're going to play it more than one time. So that probably isn't going to be
hopefully you play
you.
It more than one time, yeah.
So, because hopefully you play it more than one time. But I'll say that. And then I'll also say in kind of where you're building your machine types of games, I will often feel like, oh, I just wish it could go one or two more turns, right? Because you'll get to the point where my machine could do this amazing thing if I just had one or two more turns. And I did not feel that in this game.
Yeah.
It was fast enough. There was enough ways to pivot. There was enough ways to work things together where you didn't ever feel stuck. Or at least I didn't ever feel stuck. I didn't ever feel like I wasn't being able to accomplish something that I wanted to accomplish in the game.
Yeah, I can buy into that. I would say, honestly, for the weight of this game, it should be so much easier to get into than it is. It's kind of what you're already talking about with the language stuff.
I mean, it was easy to get into rule-wise. It was just looking up some of the words I didn't know what they meant on the cards that was harder. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just give and take, though, right? Because the words are what create the immersive theme that you want.
Yeah. No, I'm having the same struggle because I want that theme to be there. And so you almost have to be okay pushing past learning that little bit of language. And iconography as well, because there are a lot of icons on the main board that you do just have to learn or keep referencing the rule book because the cheat sheet does not reference any of the icons.
That's true.
And
although the iconography is much less complex than a lot of other games that have iconography. So
I applaud the iconography because once you understand it, it's so easy.
Yeah, I don't think I ever had to look up an icon.
No, it made complete sense.
After we initially went through and saw what everything meant. So
yeah, that's right. Okay.
Well, I was going to say, how did you feel about player interaction in this game? Because I think you having a better grasp of the rules, especially at the start, did you feel like you were able to watch my strategy, figure out ways to stop me or work it to your advantage?
I
how'd you feel about that?
I think it's there to some degree. I don't think you can really... I think... You kind of played it up a little bit bigger than I would as far as being able to block your opponent from doing what they want to do. But I do think there is interaction. The fact that there's only so many spaces on the board and there's only so many spaces that do specific actions that you can block people from doing some of the things that you think they want to do, or it's a race for you to get there before they do because you want to make sure that you get to either create a card this time or you want to make sure you get that really heavy resource boost. And that guy's just going to sit there and take up that spot until he gets wiped out from the sleep cycle being changed. So I think the player interaction is there. I don't think it's overly so. So it's definitely not a screw you game, but there is definitely interaction.
Yeah, I think more interaction than even what you're kind of alluding to. But again, you said
it's probably somewhere between the two of
us. You thought that I went too far with it.
I really think it's probably somewhere between the two of us.
But so. I was maybe like watching for that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because you went on the one create a card spot the first turn, and then we were four sleep cycle rounds away from even removing that that piece.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go on that create a card thing for... So, I mean, it changed
the whole strategy of what I could
do because I had to intentionally place my people where they would get activated by the next sleep cycle because then they could create cards. And I mean, I had to change a lot of what I did because you placed your person there.
I could hear the saltiness in your voice when you're like, you really want to do that? Like right now?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I do.
But I think there were some things like that too, because there's a limited number of recruiting clients and a limited number of placing the objects, which gets you the upgrades. And so I really think you can. I know we don't usually play in a screw you fashion when we play games.
The potential is there. Yeah. And even more so in a 3 or 4 player game if you decide to go that route.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about how much... Well, we kind of talked about it already, but table space. You need a decent amount of table space because you're building multiple tableaus and you have the main board and the cards as well. So this does not travel well.
I mean, yeah, you could take it to a restaurant. There's enough table space at a restaurant. So, I mean, I agree. You wouldn't want to take it in the car.
No tray table.
Or in an airplane or on a picnic, probably, or anything like that. But, well, and again, comparing it to other games where you're building up your resources and your machine and you're this and you're that, I'd say it takes up a smaller or comparable amount of table space to other games that are going for the same strategy that it does. I'm trying to think. I was like maybe like a 1 foot by 1.5 foot type of zone. Does that sound about right?
For the tableau.
For the tableau, yeah. And then you've got your board where that's shared where you're placing, and then you've got your cards.
All right, so next up is price, which unfortunately we can't talk about tonight because this game has not had a full retail release yet. So we were able to pick this game up at Gen Con, and my understanding is that it looks like this might hit retail officially in 2025 at some point. I'm having trouble finding a lot of information on the actual release date, but looking on BGG, I found something not too long ago that stated that they're working with international publishers to localize the game for the English language. I'm not sure I understand that, since you already have the game in English based on the rule book that I read.
And it was well written. It wasn't
I had
like
no issue with it.
You needed to work on it anymore. Yeah.
So apparently Hobby World is not going to be selling it directly in English. So I think what it really sounds like is they're trying to get a publisher that will print it for over here. I could be wrong about that. Hobby World's welcome to reach out and say something, but that's what I've gathered so far. Hopefully this is something that will make its way over here in 2025, because I think it is well worth the look. So, Anna, with all that said, let's jump into our grading and final thoughts.
Yeah, so I guess for my final thoughts, I would give this game, I mean, a solid B, probably. Man, I don't know. It's like I want to bump it higher because of the art. But I think in terms of how often I would play it, I don't think it's going to end up being one of my favorite games that I'm excited to show people when they come over to the house.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say it's not going to be like one of my favorite games I want to keep coming back to.
No, I think I will come back to it just because you can play it so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we could pull it out very easily. I mean, and we get in this space a lot where it's date night or the kids have gone to bed and we're like, man, we want to do something together, but we're tired. And this is great. It has a lot of the components and good strategy in it.
It does make you think through it.
You have to think about it. You have to plan your strategy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fun. And so I think I would come back to it, but I don't know that it'd be the first one that I'd want to pull off the shelf and say, let me show you this amazing new game that I want to show you, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why I'm giving it a B.
That's really interesting to me. I'm curious. Do you think that's because of the complexity of getting into it?
Yeah, it may be, because it's really the theme would be difficult to explain to people. Even though it's a good theme, it's a weird theme to explain to people. Whereas with other ones, I can say, oh, yeah, you like nature, let's play this foraging game. Or, oh, yeah, you like animals, let's play this game where you get to make a bird apiary. Or, let's go fight zombies, you know? Yeah, and so
I get that.
You have these very well-themed games, and I think this game is well-themed, but it's kind of a quirky theme. And I think that's maybe more what would keep me from pulling it off the shelf right away. Because I don't know who the quirky theme would land well with, I guess. So it'd be like halfway through a game night type of
That's
pull.
Really funny, because I feel like... I don't know. I hear what you're saying.
You don't have to agree with me.
No, well, I'm torn because, like, I think in my heart of hearts, I would prefer to play this game exclusively at two players. But then at the same time, like, I finish and I'm like, oh, this couple would really like to play this game with us. And this couple would really like to play this game with us.
Yeah.
So I'm really torn. But I do think that the barrier to entry, like we talked about, is hard. And I think that hurts the grade a little bit. I also think that, and this is silly of me to say because the game's not even out yet, I already want an expansion for this game.
What?
Where there's more variety in the starting boards that I can feel like, and maybe even a new board to play on for the main board. Like, just some things like that. Like, I want more of that variety instead of feeling like I'm playing in the same space over and over again. But I do think they do a good job with the theme for a very light game. Not a very light, for a light game. I would say it's medium light. They also have a very fun game that plays quickly, and it's very smooth once you get into it. And, of course, the artwork and the theme itself is really cool. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to give this...
See, you want to give it a B2? I can feel it.
I'm going to give it a B+.
Yeah. See?
I think it's close. I'm very happy with it, especially for a game that I bought blind. Like, I knew very little about it when I bought it other than the theme itself. And so I wasn't sure what was going to come from it. But I'm very happy with it.
Well, and another thing I will say is I think... it is wonderfully balanced in terms of strategy and playtime.
Yes.
Like, amazingly balanced.
I would agree.
I'm sitting here thinking, man, if it was the slightest bit shorter, I would feel like I didn't get to some of the things I wanted to accomplish. And if it was really too much longer, I think
it would overstay its welcome.
It's very well balanced. So congrats to playtesters and everybody that helped them figure that out, because it plays very, very well for the amount of strategy and the length of time that it takes.
Yep. Well, Anna, very on brand. It's time to go to sleep.
Oh, whew.
So.
Maybe I'll have some lucid dreams.
Oh. Maybe. I guess it's time to go to bed, man. I'm so tired.
Ho ho. Says Jared.
That just sounded really exciting to me, because if I have lucid dreams, I don't know anything about them. So
you wouldn't even remember that.
I wouldn't even remember. But maybe you, listener, will remember your lucid dreams this evening, and maybe you'll remember this podcast. And thank you so much for listening. That transition sucked.
Yep.
It's over. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description.
Start over.
I'm plowing through.
No.
If you don't like socials, get it. Stop talking.
Start over.
Check out our website at the Game Table Podcast.
It's
going
to take like 20 seconds.
Shut up.
And you'll be happy. Future Jared will thank you. He will. He'll be like, oh, man. Because future Jared's going to have to get all the recording equipment and re-record it anyway. So you may as well just back up and take an extra 20 seconds and re-record it right now.
Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com. Or find us on BoardGameGeek. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in destroying this podcast.
Please.
In growing this
Please.
Podcast.
Please, I beg you.
Special thanks.
Oh, gosh.
Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music. Stop it! I'm trying so hard! And to Alexi Chistlin who made the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we have gotten some sleep and we head back over to the feature table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever. Sweet dreams.
Good night.